Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business-building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick-and-mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today, we are going to be talking about bottlenecks to your success with CEO of Success Connections, Melanie Benson-Strick. From decision-making to delegation and planning, every single step that you take as an entrepreneur either sets you on the path to greatness or causes you to waste a great deal of precious time and money on the wrong things. We've all been down that road. We're going to talk about that. So knowing how to think and act like a CEO, whether you're making five figures or seven, is the key to building your empire. So imagine spending most of your time doing the things that you really, really love to do and you're passionate about while achieving more in a week than most people do in a year. With over 12 years experience in corporate project management, advanced results coaching, and leadership development, Melanie turns her clients into profitable, high payoff success stories. And boy, do we need to talk with her today. Melanie's clients enjoy an average growth of 172% within the first year while creating more time for living their dream lifestyle. So today Melanie is going to show us several things. One is to how to stop being the bottleneck to six and seven figure results by tackling three simple areas. We'll be talking about building a team of A players who basically run our business for us, freeing us up to be visionary and creative. As a virtual assistant, that one really catches my eye. She's going to show us how to know when to invest in your growth and when to hold back so you're really wisely using your assets. There's a lot of other things. We're going to tap into the same strategies that the big dogs use to build their empires, and we will learn how to understand cash infusion techniques. So, Melanie, thank you so much for being on the show today, and welcome.
Thanks for inviting me. You have such a nice radio voice. I'm loving it.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad you're here. I follow you around. I've been following you around for a long time. And anytime you say, well, go look at this, I go look at it. You know, if it's a system or a process or, you know, just tips and advice, I'm off and running. And you always give really, really great advice. So I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm excited for you, too. I've been hearing your name for so long, and you keep popping up in all my circles, so
oh.
It's always nice to partner and, you know,
Finally
be able to bring this. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, what you do is such a nice compliment to what I teach my entrepreneurial clients, so it's just a perfect conversation today.
That's what I think, you know, because the virtual assistants industry, as you know, is growing by leaps and bounds. However, and this is kind of a pet thing with me right now, way too many people are coming into the industry who say, well, you know, I just lost my job as a receptionist, or, you know, I'm pretty good with Excel spreadsheets, and, you know, they say, well, I'm a virtual assistant. No, you're not. You know, it's kind of like walking into a dentist office and saying, well, I flossed this morning, I can be a dental hygienist, can you hire me? Not the same thing. So,
I love it. It's great.
Kind of
great
a pet
analogy.
Peeve.
It's the same thing in the coaching industry. Oh, I think I can help people. So why don't I be a coach? Like, that's not what it means.
Those are the two industries right now that I'm really watching, and they're growing exponentially and sometimes in really great ways and other times not so much.
Yep.
So I love talking with people who know exactly what it is they're talking about, and you are one of those people. So before I launch into the hundreds of questions I have for you, can you kind of tell people who you are, what you do, and how you got here?
Oh, my goodness. Well, what I do, we'll start there, is I have a really interesting background in corporate America, and I have done a lot of training to really understand what does it take to get predictable, consistent results, not just in our business, but in life. And when I came into running my own business, like many of us, I found that it's one thing to have a passion for what you do and be really excited and have a great vision and be very masterful in our trade or our craft or our service that we provide, but it's a completely different thing to know how to transform that passion and that love that, you know, we have for our business into a structured approach to getting results that A, have, you know, can we can get results for our clients, but B, we can maintain profit in our business. And it broke my heart when I would see amazing entrepreneurs and service-based professionals who have this great gift or have an awesome program or a service that people really need, but they couldn't quite keep it in gear all the time. And what I realized was is that my background in corporate America, I spent 10 years with Motorola. I had, you know, about another 4 years in there working with different corporations over, you know, through my college days and through different little projects here and there. And what I found was is that my training in corporate America and my education as a, you know, someone who has an organizational management master's degree really set me up to understand something about running a business that when we just focus on our passion, it just our brain's just not wired that way. So I really learned how to bring together practical strategies, tools, and techniques to run your business in a way that frees you up so that you can do the things you love to do. Because, Denise, I am just like every other entrepreneur. There are things that I absolutely adore, doing a radio interview like this, mm-hmm. being able to step on a stage and you know, teach a group of people something that's going to help them in their life, and being able to create freely products and programs that help people. There are things that I do not like to do and wear me out and burn me out and make me go a little stir crazy. And so when we really understand how to think and act like a CEO and learn how to shift the way we're running our business, it actually creates more freedom to do the things we want to do. It doesn't mean we're going to work less, because most of us love what we do so much we could work all day. You know, you can work less, but for some people it's just like we just want more time for what we love.
Right.
So that's how I got here, and that's kind of the story of where, you know, kind of unfolding this. And every day I have the most privileged job of mentoring, coaching, and training 5- and 6- and 7-figure entrepreneurs to take their game up a notch.
Nice. And, you know, I agree with you totally, because so many of us who, you know, stepped out of the corporate world or said, you know what, when I leave this final job, whatever it is, I, by the time I hit my car in the parking lot, I will render myself unemployable. I'm never going back into that type of work mode. And there's a lot of us that have done that. But you're right, if you don't have the structure, and if you have to take that CEO mindset to your online entrepreneurism. If you are an online entrepreneur, you can't do it all yourself. You have to have the receptionist or the virtual receptionist. You have to have people in line to help you who, with me, I hate working in Photoshop. I can do it. I'm a web developer. I can work in Photoshop. I'd rather be hit by a beer truck.
That's funny. You actually called it a beer truck.
I'd rather be
talking about a beer truck. Okay.
And I don't know, because it's big and it'll mash me flat.
That's right. Well, you know, and I want to take what you're saying.
It.
I totally get that. I just want to take what you're saying even a step further. And you know, some people are thinking, like, I don't want to be a CEO, Melanie. That just feels so corporate, right? And whether you relate to that word or not, what the way I look at it is the chief entrepreneurial officer. One of the big shifts that I find helped me tremendously was to recognize that every day if I showed up thinking like a coach in my business, I made really small thinking decisions. I made decisions that were only going to impact me in the next few months or weren't necessarily having the global impact that I knew I wanted to have in the world. But the minute I realized that, you know what, I run a company. I'm the CEO. I'm the chief entrepreneurial officer. I have to hold the vision. I have to set the direction. I have to think globally, because that's really what I'm being called to do on this planet, is to think globally and be somebody that has a global impact. I can't afford to make decisions like a coach. I have to make a decision in my business every day how I invest, what my strategy is, how I will get the resources to do whatever needs to be done, and who I'm going to be like a CEO. And it feels like a little bit of a subtle shift, but it actually has a huge impact on the way your brain starts to sort through the mm-hmm. various decisions and opportunities that come your way every day.
Oh, I understand that. And I just put that in the chat room, Chief Entrepreneurial Officer. That makes absolute sense. So it really does. So what is the CEO factor?
Well, the CEO factor, or the Chief Entrepreneurial Factor, if we're going to just kind of pull that thread forward, is recognizing that when you have aligned your mindset, your behaviors, you know, the actions that you take every day, your infrastructure, and I want to talk about that a little bit because this is another place where we really trip ourselves up, and our knowledge base, so that we can run a company rather than being a service provider. And I would love it if those of you that are listening right now write this distinction down. There is a huge distinction between running a company and being a service provider. A service provider literally thinks, how can I get this done? What do I need to get done? How do I get the funding? How do I get the next client? A CEO says, who on my team or what resource or what access point do I have that will allow me to take the next leap? CEOs don't think in terms of, you know, small bits. They think in terms of great movement. And again, I only draw this distinction because whether you ever break seven figures or not is not the point here. This is not about becoming a millionaire. This is not about any of that. You may want that, and that's awesome, but some people just want to have more energy and more life in their business again. They want to be back in love with the business that they,
right,
you know, started in the first place. So CEO factor is really making that shift out of being a service provider in your mind and into someone who runs a company so mm-hmm. that you, like you're talking about before, you make that shift in consciousness for the decisions and the resources you will access to grow.
Right. And that's how you leverage your time as well. Mm-hmm. If you're not trying to do it all and burning yourself out and just getting out of bed in the morning going, oh my God, I've got 150 things to do. You're not creative when you're looking at a massive list of things that must be done.
Absolutely.
Your creativity just leaches out of your shoes.
And you know, it's funny, we talk about the bottleneck piece, and this book is not new to anyone in this circle, but the 4-Hour Workweek with Timothy Ferriss came out mm-hmm. a couple years ago. He talked a lot about something that I think shed light on the problem, and that is where entrepreneurs tend to get in their own way. And, you know, everything from decision-making to creativity to how we bring on a client to how we execute visions and ideas and projects, we can get in our – we can become the bottleneck if either, A, we're trying to do it all ourselves, because literally if we're trying to do it all ourselves, and I know I'm preaching to the choir with you, but just to kind of help other people understand – if you're doing everything yourself, you can only get as big as that what you can personally touch. And I always tell people, especially when I'm doing live presentation, to stand up and point your finger out and just like draw an imaginary circle around you. That's literally how big your business can get. It cannot get any bigger than what you can personally do. But mm-hmm. the other bottleneck, and this is the bottleneck that gets a little bit tricky because a lot of people don't recognize it, is the bottleneck that gets created when you do start to leverage other people's time. Maybe you hired a virtual assistant, or maybe you are developing a team, but you're not letting go. Here's some examples.
That's a biggie.
And I want to bring this back to the Timothy Ferriss thing for a second. Sorry. Timothy Ferriss talked about where we don't let other people make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge bottleneck. If you have to make every decision, guess what? If it doesn't get decided, people are going to stop working until you make the decision. If you're
right.
the only one that can get product to market or communication out the door, it just creates a massive bottleneck. And so your team gets frustrated, you get frustrated because you're not getting results, and you feel like you're not necessarily getting traction, but you have a team. And Denise, I can't tell you how many people I've mentored through that process to recognize the little tiny shifts you can make to have huge, you know, like just imagine like you've been stepping on the garden hose and the water's coming out a little dribble. Mm-hmm. You get off the garden hose and now the water can come flooding out and you can water your garden properly.
Well, you know, I heard, you know, I have a girl that I'm mentoring and she wants to build up a VA team, which is not that difficult to do if you will just let people do what they do best. And her excuse was, and I don't know if you've heard this one or not, I'm dying to know if you have, Well, by the time I write out the instructions or create the little video that tells them how to do it, I could have done it myself.
Yep. Oh, that's a big
because
one of the.
I go crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's a perception issue. And one of the things that when I'm working with a client I love to do, and it creates so many light bulb moments, is to help somebody start to understand how they process the world. And we all have our different processing styles. Most of us have heard of the whole old introverted, extroverted thinking feeling. Well, there's a system that I use around that really kind of sheds some light bulbs, and I'll shed a little bit of light here. When somebody has a desire to kind of hold on to everything, their way of processing the world is probably that they can't see beyond the possibility. It's actually, how do I say it? They can't necessarily see the possibilities of replicating their mm-hmm. system. They can only see how much time it's going to take, which means they kind of tend to see everything in the moment, which means they're not necessarily a visionary. They're more of a supporter, because supporters yeah. tend to think in the moment. And what that means to people is they don't recognize the power of systemizing their processes so that every time for the next 10 years somebody does something, not just for the next 10 days. So it's a perception shift.
Right. And, you know, so what I tell these people, I said, look, create the process once, have it in your files. When somebody new comes on board, you send them the video or the audio or the document, and you're good to go. You're creating a workflow binder, if you will, if you want to put it in old-fashioned terms. And okay, come on now. You should already know this. But you're right. It is so easy to say, oh, I'll just do it myself and then go on and do the next thing. And you haven't created a system or process, and I think that's so critical in what
we
do.
Denise, I don't know what your thought is on this, but at a bare minimum, I will typically encourage people to create a system, even if it's just for them. Because mm-hmm. creating anything in your mind does two things. One, it decreases your mental processing capacity. So if you've got to think it through again, it uses up brain cells. And those brain cells could be used for something more creative. And the second thing is, this is how people make mistakes. If you're doing it in your head, you will ultimately forget something. So at a bare minimum, I tell people you should have a system for yourself. Mm-hmm. But the bigger payoff, obviously, is that when you do have a system, then you get to engage other people to start to seamlessly deliver the results that you want. Now,
oh, absolutely.
That's a huge thing in building a team of A players, by the way. We talked about why would we want an A player? And, you know, there's a couple things that I encourage people to look at as they're exploring this shift between being the service provider and being the chief entrepreneurial officer. Well, when you think in terms of a bigger scale, and you know that you can only grow so big if you're doing it by yourself, you've got to get the right people on your team so that you can feel confident to let go. And I really think that there are three dimensions of how we let go. One is we let go because we can't get anything else done. The other is we let go because we know it's time to grow. And then the third level is we let go and we actually start to what I call give over power. So we literally hand over complete chunks of our business to other people because that's the only way to scale our growth into a much bigger impact on the world. And now that's really important when you've got a vision that you know you want. You know, you've got like the Oprah vision, I call it. It's like you really want to have a huge impact on the world. But here's the distinction. You cannot do global impact if you are trying to get the cheapest, most cost-effective labor on the planet, because there's an opportunity cost, there's a trade-off. If you're going for cheap labor and you're trying to chintz out or you're trying to get newbies because that's what your budget can afford, you just need to understand that may be the starting place. But to truly be able to hand off major chunks of ownership, you're going to want to bring in some key players. And there's a quick little example I'll give you. A few years ago when I was working with my CEO Factor clients, I asked them to do a modeling project and to go out and pick one person they really respected and ask them or research how they got their business into the seven figures and beyond. And one of the ladies came back, and this is actually in my CEO Factor manifesto, this little story and the profile and the business and all that. It's really interesting. The woman came back and said, I modeled one of my mentors, And what I found was is that the biggest key decision she made was she always invested top dollar in her A players, the people that had a significant role in the business. And it allowed her to grow from five figures to seven figures rapidly. Like, she basically made that happen in like 3.5-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really significant shift for her because she'd been going after the most cost-effective labor. And when she heard her mentor grew, because she was willing to invest top dollar in the key roles, of course, some of the other roles you can, of course, get, you know, lower in cost labor. But just knowing that that's how successful people think was a real shift.
Right. And, you know, any time, and I've experienced this, and I think anybody starting out has experienced this, when you try to find somebody who may fit your perceived budget, whatever that is, oftentimes you'll find that you're spending so much time running around picking up after them that you really have wasted a lot of time and money, you know, or correcting mistakes or just saying, what the heck was that? Now I have to go fix it. So I really find that that is not the best way to do things. And believe me, I've done that, been there, done that. Didn't do it for long because I found out very quickly it wasn't smart, not for what I was doing.
Yeah.
So when do you know how to invest in your growth? I mean, to me, that would be part of the growth process is finding your A players, finding out how, you know, figuring out how you're going to pay them and bring them on board. When do you do that and when do you kind of hold back? I mean, how do you best use your assets or even perceived assets, really?
Well, I don't really think there's a one-stop-fits-all approach to this. I think this is where, and I'll just say it straight, I think this is where some of the mentoring becomes a great win for people. Because I could say, oh, you should do it here, and then for someone else, they have unique circumstances. So my most comfortable approach to that is to really get inside someone's business with them and understand what it is they're looking for and make sure that it gets, you know, matched to the outcomes they want and the timetable they want. But on a kind of like in a general idea, let's say somebody's in the five figures right now and their business is starting to really take off and they're getting regular clients and now they're at the point where serving those clients is starting to take away from being able to continue to do the marketing to keep client flow coming in. I mean, that's an interesting little paradox that many of us get into. We call it the feast or famine mode for service professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you really need to bring someone on to talk about the marketing. You really need
right.
to bring in somebody who can actually take the marketing and deliver the tasks. You want to be in the conversation of constantly generating the predictable marketing path so that you're not sacrificing leads because you're delivering to your clients. So that to me is stage number one. You start to have somebody else do the things that free you up to serve your clients. And then the next wave is you start to bring people in who can maybe serve more of the clients. And then the next wave is you start the big company wave when you're at that point where you're really having a big impact. Then you start to look at how do I bring somebody in who just runs the whole marketing department.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the progression. But I think in the beginning, five figures is exactly the right time to start bringing someone on where you get freed up from the routine marketing, you get freed up from the routine admin, and I mean things like checking emails and, you know, doing the voicemail, handling routine paperwork,
mm-hmm.
The bookkeeping, the kinds of things that, gosh, you're probably not that good at anyway. They probably burn you out, and it would be a better return on investment for you to be focusing on the things that only you can do. Does that make sense?
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have this conversation all the time with people, so I mean, you're talking to somebody who knows exactly what you're talking about, but I'm so glad you've said that because there's a lot of people who listen to us and will download this call later on who will just have that light bulb moment and go, okay, you know, it's just perfectly stated and thank you. So the CEO factor, you had to have lived this yourself to create this. Can you chat a little bit about that?
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you straight out. I have dipped my toe in the water, and then I dip my toe back. I get a little bit farther, and the reason why I'm saying that is it's a dance for some people, and the foundation that you lay as you become the CEO in your business has to start with your mindset, It has to start with you getting this is who you are. The reason why I say this is because when you start to know that you're the CEO in your business, whether you have a team of one or you have a team of 200, everything changes. You get how to be different with this. So some people get caught up in the perfection of, I have to have this big company to call myself a CEO. No, it's an attitude and a mindset first.
I agree.
Then the second piece becomes the way you choose to make decisions for your growth. So in making those decisions, Denise, we start to recognize, hey, I don't have to make all the money myself. I can get funding, or I can think of different ways to leverage my time and energy to accomplish a task. It doesn't have to just be me. It can be I start to look at different infrastructure components. One of the things I wanted to talk about in the CEO shift is there's a really interesting dynamic between entrepreneur who is very focused on marketing and sales and creativity, and CEO. And this is something that I've seen really, really significantly in the growth of our industry, particularly the online industry, where people can get spoiled by creating online leads, but they don't have an infrastructure to maintain the growth that they're creating on the client side. And so what happens is they combust. Or they start to get a really bad reputation in the industry because there's no one there to support them. And I call it marketing. Yeah, it's marketing concentric.
Yeah.
It's I'm so hyper-focused on marketing that I'm going to basically, and excuse my language, but I call it the rape and pillage model. I'm going to go out and get all the leads I can. I'm going to pull all the people into my little universe, and then I'll figure it out. Well, they don't figure it out.
No, they don't. And I've seen some really big names in online marketing hit the wall hard. And they have no more credibility with me. I'm not sure they ever will.
It's been very sad because they
started out with some remarkable, just really remarkable ideas. And, they created the excitement, they created the buzz, and then, every once in a while, I will go ahead and buy a product and almost invariably, well, about a year ago, it's gotten better, but about a year ago, I would be disappointed every time. And I started realizing it was the same marketers, and I just crossed them off my list.
Yeah.
And it was a shame. It was almost like losing a friend, in a way, because you get so familiar with these people, and they're just so big, and all of a sudden, not so much. And it's a shame.
Well, I bring this up because part of thinking like a CEO is going beyond just focusing on marketing. You've really got to understand what kind of infrastructure? What I mean by infrastructure is, what kind of team do I need?
Mm-hmm.
Which could mean, how do we fulfill? What's our customer service? How do we support the people that are coming into our programs? It may mean technology, making sure you have the right technology that matches the delivery of mechanisms you're using. It may mean ways that you manage information about your clients. Last year, I had to do a really big CEO shift, and I was using Practice Pay Solutions, One Shopping Cart, whatever you want to call it, for years and years and years, probably for 9 years, and I had to make a shift because the growth we were experiencing and the shift we were making in being able to take care of our clients required us to have more information and be able to market and segment differently. So I went to Infusionsoft.
Infusion, right.
Yeah, and so for me, that was a huge expense. It was a lot of work, but the payoff in the infrastructure side was right based on my growth path. I'm not saying everybody should do it because it's a really difficult program, but it made
expensive.
Sense. Yeah.
Right.
So you have to match your growth to your infrastructure, to the right support systems, to the right policies and procedures that are in alignment with the company you're becoming. And when you don't do that, it makes everybody stressed. Your clients are stressed. Your team is stressed, you're stressed, and this is where the implosion comes from. And it's really hard to recover from them.
It really is. And, speaking of Infusionsoft, they do a great job of marketing, and it really is a fabulous system. We work in it all the time. And I'll get people come to me and say, okay, well, I'm starting a new business, and I need Infusionsoft. No, you don't. Please don't. Nope. You're not ready. So, that's kind of a reverse thing. Infusionsoft is absolutely fabulous when you're ready for it, but not before. Otherwise, it's too expensive and it's too difficult. But you're right, when you're ready for it, it is a tremendous process to use. So bottlenecks, I mean, we all have those. I know we kind of keep going back to those. What are some of the key bottlenecks we should be aware of?
I think there's, we talked about some of these a little bit earlier. One of them is the bottleneck of making decisions all mm-hmm. on your own, you know, not letting other people have some of the power. For example, if, you know, I learned this from Timothy Ferris, I think it was brilliant, is basically you can give some of your team members a kind of a boundary of where they get to make the decision. So you can make mm-hmm. a decision to spend money up to $100. After that, I want to know. But empowering people to make decisions about customer service. If you have to answer every customer service question that comes in, you're going to be really overwhelmed.
Right.
It could be about how a product gets created. You know, maybe you don't have to have your hand in every single decision there. You tell people your vision, you let them know what it needs to look like, and then you let them get it done for you. So being willing to let go means that you let other people help you make decisions. I think another bottleneck is, and I started to allude this idea of ownership, is the difference between having someone on your team who has ownership and someone on your team who requires a lot of direct management.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to look at being the bottleneck, if you have to direct everyone on your team every day, then what you've become is a manager. I don't know one entrepreneur. Actually, I know one entrepreneur. I do know one entrepreneur that likes the management side of things. But most entrepreneurs do not. They only, mm-hmm. only want to do the creativity and the passion for life that they
mm-hmm.
have. So that's another example where we become the bottleneck, is when we have to direct traffic all the time. There's
yeah.
a third bottleneck, and it has to do with, you know, the financing and the funding of our growth. If we think, let's say we're at a stage where we want to have a huge ramp up in growth, and if you think to yourself, okay, what can I sell? What can I do? How can I fund this growth? That, in essence, can become a bottleneck. Because what you do is you start taking really big risks, and it can go a good way or it can go a bad way, and it's very risky. It's not, you should, not that you should never use it, but it's just to keep in mind that that's another form of a bottleneck, is if I have to create my own funding. So a CEO would start to think, okay, well, how else can I infuse capital into my business? Do I want to start doing my accounts receivables differently? Do I want to go for an angel investor? Do I want to maybe get loans from family and friends? So how would you infuse capital into your business? So
mm-hmm.
CEOs start to think outside the box, and you know, they release that bottleneck of how you can grow. You can only grow as fast as you can self-fund your growth. So those
mm-hmm.
are three examples. There's a bunch of other ones in the manifesto that I wrote, but I think just those are probably the three most common ones that really cripple people and their ability to, A, stay in their passion and their focus and their energy, and, B, be able to grow at the level that they want to.
Oh, yeah. Melanie, where can people find the manifesto?
Oh, it's at www.theceofactor.com. Actually, hold on, I'm giving you the wrong one. It's www.theceofactormanifesto.com. Sorry, so it's theceofactormanifesto.com.
Okay, it's going in the chat room. All right. So how does somebody know if they have the CEO factor or not? I know a lot of people who, you know, this, I'm an entrepreneur, and many of us are.
Mm-hmm.
But how do they really, really know? I mean, how can they just wake up one morning and go, you know, I am not going to beat myself against the wall. Every single day I am going to be the chief entrepreneurial officer. How do they recognize that trait, if you will, in themselves?
You know, I think there's a couple things. First, we could talk about how you know you don't have it. You don't have it if you have a job, you know?
There you go.
Yeah, if you have created yourself a J-O-B, then you do not have the CEO factor. I think if you think about how you're going to get everything done yourself, you don't have the CEO factor.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have support from your team, or if you don't even have a team, then you don't have the CEO factor. Even if your team is interns, I don't care how you have other support, somehow getting that support is how you end up with the CEO factor. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think, you know, it's really about recognizing that you want to have a business that's bigger than just you. And I'm not suggesting that every single person should have the CEO factor in their business. I mean, really, it should be there if you want to be in the six, consistently delivering six figures and above. It should, you should consider bringing the elements of the CEO factor into your life if you don't want to feel like you have a job. And I really highly suggest you bring the CEO factor into your life if you are burned out and struggling with spending the time doing the things you love to do in your business.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's resonating for you, then there's something that you will be able to get out of the manifesto or out of this concept to be able to have the joy and the passion and the financial results that I know you want for your business.
Right. Now, people can find you at Success Connections, too. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, my main website is successconnections.com. All roads lead to Rome, so to speak. So any of them you go to, you'll be able to find out more about me.
Right, right. So I have so many questions. I almost don't even know where to start. So I was starting to write down questions about a week ago. I wonder how long I've got her on the show for. Let's talk just a little bit more about the CEO mindset. Let's say that somebody is just, I mean, they're trying hard, they're building a team, they're giving over a little bit of authority and power to the team, if you will, but they still slip back into those bottlenecks unconsciously. Why would this happen, and what can they do about it?
You know, I think we slip, and it's so natural, is that we slip back into our old mindset. And it can get triggered by a few things. One, it can get triggered by cash flow challenges, I should say. Not the good cash flow, but the lack of cash flow.
Right.
It can happen because we hit a wall, and maybe someone on our team disappoints us, and we start to lose some trust, and we think, oh, my God, I've lost control. This feels really scary and uncomfortable. And instead of thinking, what do I need to be willing to do differently, we regress, and we pull back. And we think, okay, that didn't feel good. I'm scared. Like, I'm just going to not take that risk again. And instead of, you know, everything we do as an entrepreneur is a learning game. And recognizing the learning, we just, we retract. And that's, a lot of people just operate that way from fear. And I think,
A lot of people operate that way in their personal lives, and they may translate that into their business life as well.
Absolutely. You know what? It's actually a processing style. One of the processing styles is to always, to be very reserved and very, methodical about growth, and if you're methodical about growth, if something doesn't go the way you want, you'll retract until you figure it out.
Right.
So, for some insight there. But I think those are two of the core reasons why people slip. And, you know, if we do slip, one of the things to recognize is like, it's like falling off the bike. You go, oh, I slipped back into my old service professional thinking. No wonder this is happening. My whole focus has been on pulling back in and getting safe and you know, going back to my roots and what I know instead of using this as a learning to grow. So, all right, let's restructure the plan and let's get back on track. And I think a lot of times we also start to slip back into the old way of being, and we don't have anybody in our life that can call us on it. You know, our team certainly isn't going to call us on it. A lot of our friends, they're so used to seeing us the way we are that they don't really think about it. Unless you're in a mastermind group that's a really progressive mastermind, or you're working with a coach, you may not even know you've slipped. So not, you know, having this whole thing going on in our own head all the time is dangerous for an entrepreneur, because it's really easy to hide from poor strategies and thinking that are keeping us trapped where we're at right now.
I agree. I'm glad you said that about mastermind. I didn't have that on my list of things, but I really would love to hear your take on mastermind groups and coaching, because I know you're a coach. And, I mean, I love the whole mastermind concept. I mean, I get so much out of it. Can you share a little bit about how that works in your life, in your business?
Well, you know, I have two levels of this. I have what I experience personally, and then I have what I deliver to my clients. And here's what I know about the coaching and masterminding. Coaching is really powerful with the right coach who is able to not only mentor you and guide you in proven strategies, but can also ensure that what you are taking on is able to integrate for you. This is one of my biggest pet peeves, is just because you're good at something doesn't mean you should be coaching and mentoring people. Because, you know, and this is me being on my high horse for a minute, but I have spent 10 years training to be a very powerful coach, because I can not only understand procedures and, you know, systems and strategies and all the stuff that needs to be done, but I also know when it's not going to work for somebody, because they can't assimilate it yet. So coaching is really about bringing those two worlds together. How do you actually integrate techniques, tools, strategies, so they work based on your goals, your visions, and your values? It's not the cookie cutter mode. So coaching is really the integration so that what you do works and will get you predictable results. When you bring in a mastermind component, what I find that's so intriguing is that's where we start to tap collective consciousness. This is where we start to tap into, oh my gosh, this person's learning this. I love this idea. And then a brainstorming starts to occur, and all of a sudden, an idea that could never have been formed in one mind has now morphed into a new possibility that someone may never have thought of before. A great example of this, I hosted a private mastermind for my clients earlier this year. And some of these people had been coming to my masterminds for years. Some of them were brand new to masterminding with me. And by the way, I mastermind very differently than a lot of other mentors do. I use more of a tried-and-true mastermind approach. So everybody gets an hour in the hot seat. And one of my clients was in the hot seat, had a great session. But
now, what do you mean by hot seat?
Hot seat means you get to step into having everybody focus on you for 1 hour. So you set up your business.
That's got to be frightening.
Or it's very exciting, depending on how you look at it. And most of the time they're very excited because we're going to reflect back to you possibilities and opportunities or maybe blind spots that you can't see for yourself.
Right.
So in the hot seat, my client has this great shift, but I knew there was something still bubbling, and here's where mastermind magic really occurs. At dinner, later, we're talking at the table, and something clicked. And all of a sudden, everything he heard, not just from his session, but everybody's sessions throughout the day, clicked in, and he said, what if I did, and he spouted his plan. And it was the difference between a one-year strategy to get him into his, you know, mid-six-figure business he wanted and a three-month strategy to get him into the mid-six-figure business he wanted. And it just came like lightning. And that's what happens when you're in a good mastermind, is it doesn't stop once you've had your specific feedback session. It doesn't stop with the coaching. It continues to germinate like a think tank that just constantly, you know, is evolving and growing these amazing breakthroughs and ideas, and something unleashes in you because all of a sudden you see how to put not just your feedback but everybody's ideas together. And that's what I love about masterminds.
Now, where can people reach you if they want to mastermind with you?
You know, just info@successconnections.com is a great place to start, or you can send an email to coach@successconnections.com. Those are both places you can get to me, and we can make sure you find out about the mastermind groups that we run and which one's a good fit for you, because there's different ways to mastermind, and we want to make sure someone's in the right group for them.
Now, when you say the kind of the old-fashioned way of masterminding, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think there's two strategies. There's a mastermind of I'm going to teach you things, and a lot of people call that masterminding because they believe that their mind is the master. So they call a mastermind
like
literally
coaching.
Yeah, it's training. Like, I'm training you, or I'm coaching you. And the more traditional mastermind is based on the collective energy of a group.
Right.
And how that was spouted in Think and Grow Rich is how I mastermind. I really believe in pulling together diverse groups of people that can learn and grow from each other and support each other and have each other's back. And so that gets created by facilitating rather than, you know, me being the expert and having to, you know, deliver all the goods, so to speak.
Right.
Not that I don't deliver, but, you know, it's not about me. It's about the collective consciousness in the room.
Right. Think and Grow Rich. When you said that, I looked to my right over at my bookcases and went, there it is. I bought that book at a garage sale 150 years ago. It was a long time ago.
You are not that old.
I think I am. I feel that old sometimes. But it was a find. I think I bought it for 10 cents at a garage sale. I've dropped it in the tub twice.
Oh, my.
So it's all swollen. And I won't give it up. It's one of my very first books in my entrepreneurial library. And it's like my little magic book. It's not going anywhere. So, and I have, you know, other versions of it. But I still pull out that old yellow beat-up paperback, and off I go with it.
Nice.
But you have to have those, you know, those standbys in your library if you want to even grow, I think. I mean, Think and Grow Rich is, if y'all haven't read it, you've got to go find it. It's really a must read. It's a must keep as far as I'm concerned. So let's go back very quickly to the CEO factor. The CEO factor, I know there are entrepreneurs that embrace the chief entrepreneurial officer as opposed to just saying, well, I'm a business manager. What's the difference between the ones who do this and who resist it? I mean, what is the impact on their business if they don't really understand that they are the chief entrepreneur in their business?
Well, the first one is definitely, and by the way, it has everything to do with what you want from your business. So if you want to stay small and you really just want to have something that, you know, you do 10 hours a week, we're not talking about CEO factor here for you. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the people that really have a big vision and want to have this get out there in a big way. And really what happens, first of all, is you're going to lose money. Because if you can't generate predictable income, then you can't grow. I mean, it's just really difficult to grow and sustain that growth. So what the CEO factor does first is it helps you identify the right business model that, A, capitalizes on your positioning in the marketplace to create a scalable business that can generate that kind of income. So that basically means cash flow. The second element is going to be, you know, your time and your energy. You know, the people who are not embracing these concepts are the ones that are the most burnt out. I have amazing colleagues and friends that just fight this because they're just conditioned to be workhorses, and they refuse to shift their mindset about it. And after a while, I just give up. I'm like, okay, see you in 10 years when you're done with this, you know, burnout mode.
Right.
But, you know, it's burnout. And when you're burned out, you're not creative and you're not thinking straight. And I think that's really what the cost is in life. Is when you're not willing to open your mind to a different possibility and shift your consciousness towards something that's proven to work, you end up kind of getting trapped in some cycle that's not going to get you what you want out of life. And that's really the saddest thing, is most people can have more time away from the business, but because of the way they're doing business, they're trapping themselves in it, and, you know, this is a powerful word, like you're really becoming a slave to your business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really not what any of us left our corporate jobs or whatever we were doing before to have.
No, and truthfully, I found myself doing exactly that. But, you know, entrepreneurs love what we do. I mean, that's why we do what we do. We're in love with it. We're passionate about it. I mean, I'm a web developer as well as a virtual assistant, and this is how attached I am to my businesses. You know, most people dream in color, and they can smell things, and they're running through the meadow, and everything is vivid and bright and HD and, you know, high definition. I dream in HTML anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
Very sad. And I told my husband, I said, I think I've really become a geek. He said, no, you're a nerd. So we had a big conversation about whether I was a geek or a nerd, and I think I'm both. But I'm so attached to my business that I was reaching burnout because I was doing way too much on my own and thinking about it all the time, and that's just not healthy. So I understand exactly what you're saying. You have to really broaden your horizon and not do all of the little mundane, nitpicky things and pass those off to somebody else who can do it quicker, faster, better, cheaper than you can. Because if you're working at $10 an hour when you should be working at $95 an hour, that's not smart.
Yeah.
Not smart at all.
I agree.
So, Melanie, what are a few CEO strategies that could make a huge impact on profit and results in a quick fashion?
You know, I think there's a couple of things that people can do. One is to start challenging yourself about the story you've made up about how you're going to fund your growth.
Mm-hmm.
And be willing to create some new possibilities about cash infusion. April last year, I did a private training for a few of my clients. It's called the CEO Factor Retreat. And what I did was I taught them some new strategies on cash infusion. How do you fund your growth? How do you manage the cash you have? How do you go out and find people who may want to give you money? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the minute you start creating new possibilities, you're going to be able to infuse new life into your business growth. So that would be one. I think the second one, again, this is something we talked about in great detail when we did the retreat, was how do you move from a service-based business model to a business model that is scalable and does create predictable revenue. And not just revenue, I mean profit. And there's a big difference. So you may be exploring things like licensing. It could be it's time to take what you're doing in one business channel and move it to other business channels. It may be that you need to change the model completely. This model may never be able to deliver anything but you being a service provider. So there's a lot of different ways to explore. But overall, what I find is that people get locked into, this is the way my industry does it, and that's where you, again, get into that trap. I actually love this stuff because those of us that have been following the information marketing model or the, you know, the product funnel model for a long time, guess what? It's broken.
Oh, I know.
It's flawed, and it can and it works in some cases, but not all cases. So what you want to do is you want to start saying, where do I really want to be? What is it that are the gifts that we're meant to bring to the world? Now, how do we build a model around that that works for our company and our customers? So it may or may not be a product funnel. It may or may not be information. It may or may not be service. What is it going to include? And that's where it gets really juicy. You start to think bigger than the level of thinking you've had up to now. That's where growth explodes.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the product funnel, that's, I've watched that for years. I mean, I've been following Joel Kalm around for years and people like you and Rosalind Gardner, and I've watched it all. I've watched it come and I've watched it go, and I've watched the resurgence of some of these things. It is fascinating to watch how people deliver information and products. It's just, it's remarkable. Every day changes, it seems like. Can you give me some examples of, you know, people that you've seen over the years who maybe just said, well, you know, I'm burnt out, I'm stuck, and then just made that complete shift and brought themselves into a really high-energy business?
Well, and I wouldn't say this person was burnt out and stuck, but this person has definitely exhibited the growth patterns that we're talking about really at each stage of their evolution. She got how to infuse more of the CEO energy, and that's Alexandria Brown. You know, I have a lot of respect for how she's chosen to grow her team and her infrastructure to support the growth of her business. So that has been a model that I just, I think, if you, and I know her pretty well, and I know a lot of the inside scoop behind it, every step of the way as she made another leap, she shifted her infrastructure and her team to make sure it could sustain the growth. And that is a really smart decision. You know, she didn't rely on, you know, just self-funding all the time. She looked at alternative ways to grow the company. So there is a lot that could be learned from someone who is following that path. Someone who's maybe a little bit more well-known is Richard Branson. And one of the things that Richard Branson is well-known, and I love this book. If you haven't read this book, I highly recommend it. It's called Business Stripped Bare. Richard Branson talks a lot about how he knew where his limitations were and what his strengths were as a CEO of the company, as a, as an entrepreneur for that matter. He's highly creative and very ADD and all over the map. And so he
That's
knew.
That's Virgin Airlines, right?
Virgin Airlines. He did Virgin Records. He had a Virgin train line. You know, he's in a lot of different things. And so Richard Branson told the story in Business Trip Air about how he recognized the need to surround himself with really key players and to not be someone who had to control everything, but to really hand off and not be the bottleneck. And he gives some great stories about it. I think when you look at someone that's created his level of success, by the way, he could have ended up just like any other service provider. In the beginning, he had a pretty, you know, relatively small dream. Because he's smart enough to surround himself with talented people, he kept growing.
Well, you know, years ago I worked for a small company in the town where I live, and this man that ran this company, it turned out it was a huge company after all, but he was a Cuban immigrant, and he had an MBA, which a lot of people don't do much with their MBA, I have to say, but he was telling a story in the hallway one day that struck me, and it's been with me for years, that he said, you know, I don't type. I never did learn to type, and when I went to college, they were insisting that I had to learn to type. And he stood up, told his instructor, said, no, I will hire people to do that. I'm not interested. And he was dead serious about it. He said that was small. It was mundane. He would hire qualified, competent people to do the typing. He wasn't going to take time away from his vision and his energy and his passion to learn to type, and he didn't. and he's a multi-millionaire. So he knew even in college he was going to hire competent, qualified people to do the things that he simply had no interest in. And that stuck with me. So when I started my own business, I went to that business model in my head, and it's worked very well for me.
There you go. You totally get it.
And it was just a chance conversation that I overheard in the hallway, but it made an impact. So I think that's kind of what you're talking about with Richard Branson, same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, there's people can operate in this at all different levels. You know, I have a friend and a colleague who is very engaged in the she's involved in the entertainment industry and crosses over into the entrepreneurial industry. She works with young women. And, you know, she knew from the get-go that she had to design this like a business that could be scalable. So the kind of stuff that she gets results on is huge. Her business has grown tremendously in the short – I mean, she's like in her 20s.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's crazy.
Well, if you can stay focused and you're doing the things that you need to be doing, it can be done. And in these days, you know, people are experiencing what I call a low-level sense of dread about the economy, about politics, about – oil spills off the Gulf Coast, you know, Louisiana, which is about 13 miles from me right now. You know, there's just so many things to worry about if you allow it. And I think that people, if they will just get away from all of that low-level dread and understand that within most of us an entrepreneur does exist, I think once you open up your mind to that possibility, remarkable things happen. And if you go to people like, you know, you, Melanie, and other coaches, I guess, there are some that are really good out there, some maybe not so good. Or, you know, get into a really good mastermind group and you start sharing your vision and your ideas with other people, marvelous things can happen.
But you have
to get past that job, you know, that J-O-B, I'm going to get $10 an hour, and, you know that's coming in. It's kind of like people who are on unemployment right now. They're kind of counting on that, which I think is sad, but... A lot of people do. They just get in that mindset, well, I've got that money coming in. I know it's coming in, and I'm good to go with that. But entrepreneurs don't think like that at all.
They don't, no. And it's a great distinction that you bring up. I'm so glad you said it.
Yeah, nobody thinks like that. But I love what you're saying about having a business that you know what's coming in. You can predict what your income is going to be. So where can people go to talk with you about that? Because that is so, so important.
Yeah,
you know, how do they create that job in their own life, in their own little office? How do they create that career, job, whatever it is that they want to term it until they get to that chief entrepreneurial officer? How do they know that what they're doing is scalable and it's going to be profitable? So how do they chat? They need to chat with you.
Yeah,
clearly.
I think the absolute first place is start by getting a copy of the CEO Factor Manifesto. It's completely free. I was very passionate about this discovery and the impact of it. And it's probably, it has now become the most favorite piece I've written by everybody who's read it. And then once you read it, you'll have an email or you can set up a consultation with me and we'll talk about how this can apply to your business.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the best place to start, though. And it's at theceofactormanifesto.com. And when you get there and you sign up, you'll also see the blog and some other articles and, you know, I just want to hear what's up for you. It's like, I love knowing where you're at on your journey. So just jump in, say hi, tell me what's up for you. You know, I think what you have in your business is so important to the world that I can't wait to help more people get it out there in a bigger way. And that's what it's all about to me.
So we've got about a minute remaining. We've got a couple of people on the switchboard. Do you have time to take questions if we can get them in?
I can do about like 5 minutes, and then I've got to race out the door today for a meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if we can get – sometimes people can hear us, sometimes they can't. Let's see if we can get anybody on the line. So this is Denise Griffiths. I'm here with Melanie Benson-Strick. Do you have a question for Melanie? Hello? Do you have a question for Melanie? Maybe not. Sometimes people put us on mute and then they don't hear us chatting.
Ah, yes,
so
exactly.
It happens. I love Blog Talk Radio, but it never quite works the way it
should.
But it's still such a great format that I'm not complaining, trust me. So did I miss anything? Did I miss any questions?
We totally just nailed it. And again, I think whatever questions people have that haven't been answered, they're going to get tackled in that manifesto. And it's just a it's just a great place to go exploring and figure out, all right, now what?
I know, huh? Well, I really am so glad that you were here with me today. I'm going to go ahead and shut the line down because it doesn't seem like anybody can actually get on, which does happen. Excuse me, and I know you've got to run. So, Melanie, thank you so much for being here. I really, really appreciate it, and you've given some really valuable information to our listeners. And when this call gets downloaded, as they do, they get downloaded a lot. I think you're going to help a lot of people. So thank you so much for being here. And I will go get the manifesto.
Okay, sounds good. And we'll chat.
It seems like I should have already had that, but I may well do. I'll have to go back and look, but I'm heading that way right now. So thank you, everybody, for being here, and the show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Melanie Benson-Strick wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you next week. Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.